Hello, coffee makers, not coffee takers. He is Dr. J. Joseph Burt Miller Jr., and I am the master server arms, Alfredso B. Nash Jr., and we are the host of the Cyber Coffee Hour. We are two cyber experts from Mount Vernon, New York, sharing with you our experiences in the field and also the experiences of others so we all can learn, evaluate, and eliminate, ultimately realize that we are all belong in this space. The views and opinions and thoughts of our Cyber Coffee Hour podcast are not those of our employers or professional relationships. How are you doing today, Joseph? What?
I'm doing great, man. You know what? This is the first, and this is the first episode for the pod. And what I take from this, given already we already have a library of outtakes already. So what I'm learning so far is that this is definitely a learning process, and we'll just get better with time. So I'm gonna give myself some grace. I'm gonna give you some grace. Chris, I hope you give us some grace. And to our audience, yes, we have special guests with us today, Ms. Chris Rogers. She's the innovator of the protective mouth grill. So we're gonna sit back, have some coffee, relax, just have a conversation, just learn more about her and her story, and maybe learn some other things that what she does and everything like that. So hopefully, at the end of this, you learn something new about her. But before that, we have an article, because this is a Cyber Coffee Hour, so we're going to focus on the cyber part first before we have a conversation with Chris. So, Alfredso, you want to start us off?
Yeah, so I want to talk a little bit about an article I saw on MSSPalert.com. Particularly, there was a mention of the SEC stepping in to regulate breach reporting for public companies. This report is pretty much high stakes for all of us out there dealing with cyber risk management, governance risk, and cyber incidents, and we will include it in the show notes. And I really thought it was something that we should open with as well. For me, I think this is a level up, like I like to say, at stakes in putting those incident reports or those breach incident reports into what was usually a fiscal 8K report. So for me, I think the risk conversations get a little easier. But I wanted to hear from you and our audience on those opinions as well.
Yeah, so going from the article, and I don't want to bore our audience with the full article, but there are some parts of this I did want to make sure I have share that's accurate here. So the SEC disclosure, give a little background on it. So the new regulation goes into effect approximately 5 months since the SEC voted on to approve the rule 3-2 along party lines. So it requires a registrant to report a security incident in an 8K document within 4 business days and also disclose on an annual basis material information regarding the cybersecurity risk management strategy and governance to better inform investors. Before this regulation, there have been no federal breach disclosure law that explicitly standardized the particulars.
So inform the investors is what caught me. I never heard of that in the last 10-year run in my career, and I think the stress also gets heard going forward on the breach incident report. I've never seen that in my history as a professional, so I'm very on the fence, but anxious to see what comes out of it. You know, it's something that I would say is right timed and right keyed for our industry.
Right. Just another highlight from this article here. So in regards to MSPs stating that they need to evaluate risk. So, and this is a quote from Wayne Selk from CompTIA. It says, both types of providers should be looking through the risk lens for sure, not only internally first, but also with their clients. And again, Mr. Wayne Selk from CompTIA, security programs vice president. And I quote, for those to whom this rule applies, I suspect they'll be evaluating the risks from their clients more. So none of this comes without difficult questions. What stands out so far is the seemingly ubiquitous issue of what counts as material.
Right. And then that risk lens, right? We can't let the monetary investment skew the risk acceptance or remediation of certain incidents, right? So I heard that from the article, and I also hear that the data might, looking at the article again, there might be a means to enrich that data and reporting from companies to the regulator, right? You know, so I think that's a huge and specifically, I'm a fanboy of the MSPs, MSSPs. I think that it gives them a good revenue opportunity to ensure that that report is mint and clean, you know, going to the regulator. So I definitely could resonate with that from the MSSP side. I'll just wait to hear back from the article to see what that brings in the near future, because it's big. I don't think I've heard anyone discuss it yet, so I thought we'll bring it up on our show.
Absolutely. And to kind of piggyback on what you said regarding the revenue, from the article it states that what may have served as a prelude to a use case for the incident material reporting regulation last March, software company Blackbaud agreed to pay $3 million to settle charges it made misleading disclosures about a 2020 ransomware attack that impacted some 13,000 customers. Wow. In July 2020, the South Carolina-based provider of donor data management software disclosed a ransomware attack and said the attacker had not accessed bank account information or social security numbers of donors when it had in fact accessed and exfiltrated that data. How upset would you be to learn
that I'm not going to comment. I mean, how upset would you be as a customer? And then think about the structure to the organization that maintains those customers, right? To admit, right, that data is out in the wild, the software that you use to keep it protected exposed that data, and then it keeps compounding, it keeps becoming this, you know, incident. Like, let's be real, it's an incident, right? It doesn't go away because it's publicized. It keeps capitulating and growing into something that public companies should pay attention to. I would just say it nicely, you know.
And kind of close out on this article. So now this section highlights a perpetrator. So a perpetrator turns in a victim for not reporting breach. So one company may find out the hard way that the SEC regulation isn't fail-safe. In a new extortion twist, the rules may have allowed a notorious ransomware group to simultaneously play cop and robber. According to a blog post on databreaches.net, earlier this month, in an audacious move worthy of only the most brazen criminals, the ransomware group Alf V, also known as Black Cat, allegedly filed a formal complaint with the SEC claiming that one of its recent victims failed to comply with new disclosure regulations.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch that one. That's a whole separate episode in itself. I'm not going to touch that one. That ransomware as a service has echoed out for years, so we're going to move on from that.
Oh, wow. And
I'll just
close this up. Yeah, and what appears to be a first, Alf V appears to have reported a Meridian Link, a digital lending service, which the attacker said was aware of the break-in the day it happened. So to the SEC for failing to adhere to the new regulation, according to the databreaches.net post.
Heavy.
Yeah. So I'm sure that there's going to be more a follow-up as this, like I said, this story continues to build, and just learning more things as, these companies that as they try to... I think the biggest thing, like they don't want to, number one, they don't want to make themselves look bad, right? So they want to kind of paint a story of it's not as bad as it seems, or, you know, try to maintain their customer base and make sure that, you know, everything's good when really everything's on fire, you know, but they're trying to shield everyone from it. So, but I'm sure a lot of this is going to, we're going to hear more, learn more about it as this continues to develop.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So That is that. Now, what you've all been waiting for. The great Chris Rogers is here. First, I just want to thank you for being on the Cyber Coffee Hour. Ms. Rogers, how are you?
I'm lovely. Having a beautiful day.
Nice.
Yeah. Doing great.
Nice, nice. So, yeah, so we're very excited to have you on today. We have some, you know, like I said, we just want to keep this laid back, conversational. And just a couple of things as we learn about more about you and also your backstory. And as we said, that you are the innovator of the protective mouth grill. So we definitely want to learn more about that, your company and everything that led up to that. So, but just starting off, just kind of going back with your background. So what we understand that, you know, you are the daughter of a singer-songwriter, of multi-talented mother, Miss Zoe Jackson. I have to tell you, so when I, doing my research, doing my homework, I read this and I was like, oh, wow, okay. You know, this, you know, Ms. Rogers is big time.
You did the awesome research on your research.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But also if you just want to touch on, because also too, yes, your mother's very talented also. And I think that talent has spread to, of course, not only yourself, but also your sister, Miss Sierra Rogers, who also has her own company. But, I guess if you could just share a little bit about, just how much your mother did play a role into like what you yourself are currently doing, and also the impact it had on your sister as well, as she has, like I said, she has her own endeavors.
Yeah. So, I mean, my mom was a single mom, so we were just pretty much up under her all day. And she was highly into like entertainment. She was a singer. She was doing fashion. She was a model, all the things. So she had us when she was like 19 and 20. So we kind of grew up together and we would always just be where she was. So, you know, naturally that just rubbed off on my sister and I. So it was kind of easier to hop into entrepreneurship because it was kind of like, oh, I've been here before. I've seen this growing up. And we were kind of like, she showed us different types of worlds. So we were like at age, I don't know, I want to say 10 or something. We would go to like gay brunches or we would go to like fashion show. Like it was just all over the place. And we grew up Pan-African. It was just like a big old pot of gumbo. And yeah, that's how we, I guess, came about. So she's heavily influenced into everything that we do. It's always been us three.
Nice.
Yeah.
So with that, with your upbringing, so I understand you grew up in Houston, Texas?
I sure did. Nice. I grew up in Third Ward, Texas, baby.
Okay.
Nice. You got to add the baby.
Right.
Yeah, I grew up in Third Ward, and many people know that's where Beyonce is from, and Solange, and all of them. So I actually, this is a little secret. I initially got my following on Instagram by doing impersonations of Beyonce.
Oh, wow.
But I'm like, it comes so easy because we're all from the same place. So all you got to do is just like lower your voice or something.
Did y'all two grow up together?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I mean, when they were coming up, I was like very, very young. So I would run into them different places, but at the time, you know, I'm just a child. I'm like, oh, cool girls.
So can you touch on that a little bit too? How did where you're from influence your pursuit and career today? Like, how did that influence your sense of entrepreneurship? What struggles you may have had, any adversities you may have overcome? How did that influence where you got today? Or where you are today, excuse me.
I feel like just being my natural self has set me apart from so many other people. So just being from this place that I'm from, like we grew up in Project Row Houses type stuff, like in the hood, but I call it the nice hood because it wasn't like crazy hood. It was just like everybody hood for no reason. But I mean, I still incorporate that into my daily life. Like I've never changed who I was just to like fit in or anything. And I think that truly just sets me apart. And just being a part of those things, seeing the things that I saw, like understanding how communities like that just live in poverty, just naturally eating the wrong shit. Sorry, eating the wrong stuff. Can we'll I curse off? E.
Yeah, we put the E for explicit. Don't worry about it. We'll carry it. My bad. We'll deal with that later.
My bad.
It's all good. Feel free. It's be comfortable. That's it.
Yeah, but just indulging myself in that, I call it a culture. You know, it's been easy to set myself apart in this world.
Right.
So we were talking about from Houston, you also, so I understand, yeah, grew up in Texas, Houston, Texas, moved to LA. Now with that, you started off pursuing a career in songwriting. So, but can you tell us a bit about that? Because I know you started with that, but then you kind of fell out of love with that, and maybe you can share a bit about that.
Go
ahead. No, go ahead.
Some of the culture shocks between Houston and LA too, on top of that.
I will say,
us East Coasters don't know.
The very first thing that I was just like disgruntled with was the parking. Like there was no parking. Anyway, you got to pay for parking everywhere you go. And I'm like, what is this? What is this ghetto-ness? So that was a really big turnoff for me. But aside from that, I mean, the biggest thing that has been amazing, it's like a fast track to reach your dreams. That's this place. I everywhere I go, I'm just like, LA has been a place for me, just financially, everything else. Like I can do anything I want here. So that's been great. I forgot the first question.
So I asked, like I said, moving from Houston, Texas to LA, you know, pursuing your songwriting career, but right. You had a change of heart
I guess
if you could talk about that, what led to that, and what made you kind of pivot and move away from that career?
So moving here, I kind of moved to it was kind of like pick one. What you gonna do? What you want to do? Because I pretty much write, sing, I do almost everything. So I just chose songwriting. I was like, oh, okay, that's what I'm doing in the moment. So I got here and I was like, okay, I can do this. Kind of, maybe, sort of. Quickly learned how just dark that world is, like off bat. And then aside from that, I'm learning that people don't meet up till 9 p.m. And I'm like, I'm usually asleep by 7. So like, why does nobody meet at 6 a.m.? I don't understand. But anyway, it just didn't work for me. And I didn't like how you have to, not that I don't want to work for it. It's just like, I don't like the manner of work they make you do in the industry. So to me, I'm like, I don't want this to become a job like that, because it's more of a passion, or not a passion, like a, it's kind of like therapeutic for me, writing songs and singing and stuff. So I didn't want it to be tainted because of industry. So I was like, I'm out.
Wow.
Gotcha. Okay. So now, and I know we had touched this before, but just dabbling a little bit as we're talking about just the music industry, there were some notable names that you had worked with, or you know, done some work but didn't quite publish, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
You had worked with a couple artists, I believe Will.i.am, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Some others. Can you share a little bit about that, like just what that experience was, and just how that was for you as you were, like I said, navigating through that career?
Mm-hmm. So I was initially signed to someone named Rich Skills, and his artist at the time was Chanel West Coast. So through that relationship, I was writing for like Ty Dolla $ign, French Montana, just because I'm more like, I don't write like love R&B songs. I'm like hip hop, like I'm like right. Third Ward. So I'm writing for French Montana and stuff. So rappers. So after that, I actually went viral for making a rap song, and a mixtape. But I did that because my followers were like, hey, why, you need to put out some music. So I did it, and I got a viral song out of it. It's called Cut Up, so look at it. Look it up when you're done.
We'll add that to the show notes.
It was like the first rap song I've ever done, and then that's the one that went viral. It was funny. Anyway, so after a while, we started doing work with will.i.am, and will.i.am was like, oh, let me get Chris to like write on some other stuff. So I was doing that at the time. And he actually gave me my name with two S's, and I kept it.
Oh, that's how it came to be. Very cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Okay. Learned something today. Okay.
So with that following, so now that's okay. So with that following, with the viral, you know, followers on Instagram, the new alias, what was the inspiration for you to leave that industry now? Because now we talked about it before, but for our listeners, you eventually came, like you said, you didn't like the culture, you didn't like the industry, there was pressure on the job, you know, I guess mindset, if you will. What was the ultimate I had it moment to cause you to, you know, pivot out of that industry into what else would you have done? I'll let you say.
Well, I pretty much, like, the relationship I had with Rich, I had a contract, but some things kind of fell through. So I decided, okay, let me go get me a serving job. But I didn't want to do that. I didn't come here for that. So I gave myself about 2 weeks. I was like, I'm gonna figure it out. And with the new following and everything else, I just felt like, okay, people always, well, girls mostly, where'd you get that shirt from? Where'd you get that? Da-da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, ding, okay. So I went to the store or the wholesale, whatever. And I like got a pack of clothes to see if I could sell it. In the first month, I made 4,000, which serving, I made 2,000. So easily, it was easy. I was like, okay, now I know what to do. Now I know how to flip it. Now I know like what I can do to get out of serving, pretty much. God. And then it got so fun that I was like, whatever, I'm leaving the music industry.
Nice. So go ahead.
No, sorry. No, so I was just going to follow to say, so with that gave you the, I guess not only the experience, but also the confidence to say, okay, this is something you're gaining a different skill set that you could take that and apply it to something else outside of doing the music.
Yes, but I had always been like a server. So I was in the serving industry. So I had experience doing that, like customer service, just learning how things worked. Only thing I'm just gaining knowledge of is how that specific industry worked, which was kind of easy for me because at the time, social media, you know, that's when all the Instagram stores were coming. So
So going back, your following is what onboarded to, it sounds like you said online store, e-commerce store that you were now facilitating the orders through.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is that the correct? Oh, that's epic. That's epic. I like that. So from that, now you have the e-commerce platform. You have the following from your previous venture, right? The studio venture. Mm-hmm. And now you took it up to flipping into an online e-commerce presence and footprint. So what was that like for you? And how was that pivotal? How did you pivot from that? Like, how did you use that to go forward into your additional innovation? Let's be real. Additional innovation from the e-commerce footprint.
So it took me about, 7-8 years? To kind of get bored of it. But the whole time I'm like learning e-com. Like, I'm like, okay, this is how you ship stuff. This is how you run a website. This is how you do promotional material. This is the whole time I'm learning things that I use now easily. So after 8 years, I just got to a point where I'm like, I don't like to mention that I own a clothing store online. And it made me feel embarrassed. It made me like, okay, well, what do you do? And I'm like, I have a clothing store online. And I'm just like, why do I feel like this saying that, you know? I didn't want to feel like that anymore. So I'm like real strict about if I'm not happy, then I cut it off and I find something else. So that's exactly what I did in 2020 when the world shut down. I was like, this is the perfect time to pivot. So the clothing factories were closing and everything. So I couldn't even work. So at the time, I'm just like, okay, let me figure something else out. completely closed the store. And I was like, I did it once, I can do it again. So I just like jumped into like creating mode, like creation mode. Like, what can I do? I was writing books. I was doing e-courses. I was like trying to step into more of like a business position, I guess. I don't know how to, whatever. Anyway, so after a while, the idea came to me. Yeah, where the Protective Mouth role was born. And then now,
you completely shut that footprint down by this time. So this is 2020 coming out of the pandemic. You completely annihilated that e-commerce footprint.
Yeah. And people were asking me to buy it. And I was like, nope, I don't want anything to do with this. But yeah. So then I moved on and now we're here.
Nice. Yeah. So, and again, you are the innovator of the Protective Mouth Grill. And so you made the transition from doing the e-commerce again, as we, you know, from the pandemic, and as you're figuring out your next steps, your next move, you go into 2021, starting the Protective Mouth Grill. Can you just share just what were some of the influence or inspiration or what prompted you to say, okay, this is the venture I want to pursue. This is what's needed.
I was going through my brain from the front to the back, like, what do you have in there? What do you have in there? And then I was like, I really want to do something that's never been done before. I want to do something that's cool. I want to do something that is also like, it's helping people. And I want to do something that I would wear too. Not that I wouldn't wear any of the clothes that I used to sell. It's just like, I was like, okay, I want to wear something cooler. So I would sit there and I would just think about it. And it took so long for the idea to just pop in my head. But at the time I was doing like teeth straightening or something. And I was like, wouldn't it be cool if this were a grill? So I tried, I was like, oh, there it is. So I tried every day to like make a grill out of this plastic aligner. And I basically learned inside out how to do it. So I'm like putting stuff on top. I'm putting the jewels on top. I'm learning that the plastic has a reaction to this and that. Like I'm like a scientist, but I'm doing this like for, it was like 8 months straight, day in, day out. I'm getting materials. I'm like, I got to figure this out. So in the midst of it all.
You're like a scientist and an engineer. In the same stint.
Mm-hmm. So in the midst of it all, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to figure this out. There's like, that's my only option. So let me go ahead and start the patent process. So I'm like, somebody help me do this as far as lawyers. And they're looking at me like, you're creating what now? What is this? And I'm like, just trust me. So they're like putting it through the system and the patent went through so fast because there's nothing like it right on the market. And then I didn't release them until July of this year because I was trying to license it out to people, but I had to prove the market. So yeah, we've been on the market about 6 months, 7 months?
Now, before you reached out to the patent office, did you know you had one of these world-changing innovations or were you just driven to make this cutting-edge accessory? Like, how did you know or did you know that was going to be one of those game changers in the industry? Because it sounds like you were like doing a little hardware incubation. You was influencing your research. Like, how did you know or did not know this was a game changer for you?
I just knew it in my heart. Like, I wouldn't go so hard behind something if I didn't feel it in my spirit. Like, it had to be done. So I just knew like it was going to just be something monumental in this world. I just couldn't believe that my little ass did it.
I mean, that says a lot. Like, so something that always, can you clear up something for us both too and for the listeners of the show? How difficult was that patenting process? Because you hear horror stories through the rumor mills and stuff like that. But with now you have your innovation, now you have your minimal viable product. You reach out to the lawyer folks. How were you feeling and how difficult was that entire process for you as an innovator?
Honestly, it wasn't that hard. I only say that because I get laser focused And then I just take hard out. Like, I'm like, this is not hard. Impossible is like, it could be hard, but it's not impossible. So the whole time I'm like, just piecing things together. Oh, I did it wrong. Okay, let me go back and fix it. How do I do this? Okay, so I'm understanding, I'm having grace with myself that this is a new process for me. And if I don't know, ask questions, you know, and do the research. One thing about me also is that I love to know what I'm talking about. So at the whole time I'm like, what does this mean? What is this? And the lady's like, what is this? Like, we're both kind of like, what is this? But we figured it out together. And it was like, literally it had to take, I don't know, probably 3 months. But the patent went through a day before my birthday. And I was like, this is a great birthday present.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect amazing.
Present. Yeah.
And that was faster than the e-commerce footprint. You said that took 8 months. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
So we're talking about now, I know you had an encounter as you were working through the process and, you know, getting this established. You had met Issa Rae. And we're gonna ask her about, you know, ask her for some advice.
I forgot I told you that. I was like, how did you know that?
We're gonna take notes for this industry now.
But I understand, like, she gave you some advice back. You can share what she shared with you.
Yeah. So the beautiful thing about this is, like, I involve my supporters in almost everything I do. So my supporters at the time, because I had this vision, I was like, I want Issa Rae to be my co-founder. And I'm like telling people online, like, I want Issa to be my co-founder. And they're like, yeah, we're going to get this for you. They're tagging. Sorry, Issa, if you watch this. They were tagging her like crazy. I know she saw that. And then I pop up on her and she's probably like, this girl is crazy. But anyway,
you're the reason why I'm getting.
Yeah, so I flew out to New Orleans because she was going to be there when she was, it was a premiere of her new show, Rap-ish. And I just walked up on her and I was like, hey girl, I just wanted you to know that I want you to be my co-founder of the Protective Mouth Girl. And she was just like, yeah, that shit do be messing your teeth up. And I'm like, yeah, why don't you be the co-founder? And she's just like, I'm flattered, thanks. And then she was like, what do you need me for? You're already doing it. Damn. And at the time, that kind of like hurt my feelings because I wasn't ready to receive it like that. I was like, I thought in my head she was going to be like, oh, that's dope. And I spent like $2,000 to get to her, like $2,000. On top of that, I was spending massive amounts of money on my business. I was doing so much stuff. So it kind of like broke me in the moment, but later it was such a big statement or just a sentence because I'm like, you're right. Like, I gotta get out my own way. I gotta understand who I am. I did do this all by myself with the help of, you know, attorneys and stuff. But, you know, I'm talking about the whole Protective Mouth Girl came up with it. And I have jewelers, obviously, they help. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, the innovation. You drove. I mean, you said so. You were in LA still at that time when you flew from LA to New Orleans.
Yes, and I found out a couple days before. So, you know, it was a little pricey.
Okay, but you know, I think that's a great. That's definitely a great story because, and I think that even applies even when we talk about cybersecurity. So when I meet with my mentees, the biggest thing is it really shows the importance of having a mentor, especially when you're getting started in your career, having someone that can
give me a moment,
having someone that can give you those words of wisdom, that encouragement to know that, okay, I'm getting started something new and knowing that someone is believing in me that I can achieve and do what I need to do. So I think that's a great example of that as well.
Stop.
Yeah, she definitely helps.
Yeah. Sorry, my kids want to join this episode.
This reminds me of the one, the video.
I'm sorry. I thought I closed the basement door. I'm sorry.
You remember the video when the person was on? The kids read
it. Yeah, when he had the meeting and then the kid read it.
I went, this is part of it, right?
Yeah.
But then the kid got yanked out of the room, right?
Yeah, they did. They did. Go ahead. Thank you. Yeah, this is part of it. That was imperative.
Can you show that again?
That was the mini CISO has spoken.
There you go.
She needs me to approve our holiday decorations.
That is so nice.
Come on, man. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what we do here in the Cyber Coffee Hour. This is not your average podcast. We have kids come through. We got drawings.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
We talk about protective mouth grills. We talk about cyber. We're doing it all.
Talk about the journey, the hustle, the moves that have to be made in multiple industries, right? Your industry especially. I mean, you flew to New Orleans to talk to a major influencer and, I mean, icon, let's just call it what it is, right? And to get that reassurance that you got it, that's like the ultimate enabler, in my opinion. I don't know how to say it any better than that. To get carte blanche and say, what do you need me for? I mean, if I had that experience in our industry today, I would be through the roof.
You know? I mean, it clicked later. I was like, oh, okay.
And I did want to ask, kind of going back just a little bit, because we did at the beginning, we talked about your sister as well. But if you would just share, I guess, a little bit about, I guess, for her, because she's an entrepreneur herself. If you want to share a bit about what she's done, but also, too, like your upbringing, you know, with you and your sister, was there ever a bit of that maybe sibling rivalry, like, you know, trying to fight for the attention, things like that. But, you know, did you have any of that animosity, anything like that coming up?
Any sibling rivalries or anything, one-upmanship or anything like that?
Nah, we weren't like that. We were a year and 3 months apart. So we're like Irish twins, I think they call it.
Yeah.
And our personalities are so different. Like, she's like soft and like nice and emotional. And like, she's a daydreamer and I'm all like rough and tough and like I'm a writer. So we never really had, we were together, but not, if that makes any sense. So there was never like, we're arguing over toys or arguing over anything, because we were doing separate things most of the time. But yeah, she owns her own clothing store. She pretty much started the whole curvy movement. So you know how randomly is all these plus size this, plus size that. She started with the whole Skims style.
Yeah.
And yes, so that's what she did. She opened her store about 10 years ago and just, you know, paved the way for women to actually look good in plus clothing, plus size clothing. Because at the time, they just had like the worst. They had like dresses like this. Like, what you gonna do with this? Come on, it was terrible. So yeah, Sierra like paved the way for, you know, this to actually happen.
Nice.
Very nice.
Well, Ms. Rogers, we definitely thank you for being on and sharing, of course, about yourself and the Protective Mouth Grill. Definitely wish you much success. But as we get to starting to wind down a bit, this one, outside of the business, and we want to know about you. Like, what does Chris like to do to unwind? Like, what do you do in your free time to kick back? Like, what things do you like to do to decompress?
I love to eat. So if food is involved, I'm there. I spend a lot of money on food, I'll tell you that. And I like to just relax. Like, my day to day is so like hardcore that I just like to sleep. Or be lazy on the couch, or be outside, or have a nice glass of wine, or just eat, you know, and that makes me extremely happy, more happy than you could even imagine. Very simple.
What type of wine you drink?
It depends. Red, so white. Red. I'm more into Petite Syrahs because it's the strongest grape.
Oh, okay.
Nice. And more importantly, what is your favorite coffee preference?
Well, Blue Mountain Coffee is my fave. It's a Jamaican coffee. Yes, that's a terrible accent, but okay.
See, that's talking to my roots. Mm-hmm. So, no, that's great. Yeah, Blue Mountain Coffee. Mm-hmm. Okay. Outside of that, I understand you're big into comics, if I'm not mistaken.
I forgot I told you that.
Yeah, we did forget that.
I gotta remember what I said.
we do our homework here on the Cyber Coffee. Yeah.
That's right.
That's what we do.
Oh yeah.
We're gonna put links in all the recommendations in the show notes as well.
Yeah. So I love comics. I'm a newbie, so I don't really know too much, but I know enough, and I'm like, wow, this world is just amazing. Now every time I watch a movie, I'm like, did this start as a comic book? So I'll go search it, yeah, look it up.
Right.
But yeah, I am writing a comic. Well, I already wrote it, but I'm getting one made, and I'm gonna have, it's called Lunar Sun. Oh, and I'm so excited about it. But yeah, I'm a newbie, so I don't wanna say too much because I don't know what I'm talking about. And y'all know I like to know what I'm talking about.
Right. No, but I think that's exciting, because I have my stack of comics. I read through a bit, so learning about that, that's definitely that again, it shows another talent of yours. So that's I definitely look forward to once that's complete, just check that out.
Yes.
Are there any you're currently reading right now? That's in the
What's it called?
You have
Bitterroots. I gotta go get them. Bitterroots.
I think we talked about that.
Bitterroots Saga. Yeah. The other one was, y'all write it down? Because I have a brain fart. Excellent.
And Nice House on the Lake, which I'm going to pick up after this.
Yeah, Nice House. Yeah. I need to go and get volume 2 of most of those. But yeah, those are pretty good.
And what is Excellent about again?
Excellence is about all Black people are born with powers. And just this one kid was born without powers. His was late to the show. So he was kind of shunned through the community, and they were like, you're so late to the party, thinking he's weird and stuff.
So he ended up, game up.
Yeah, step your superpower game up. But this is a story about that and fatherhood with Black people and all that stuff. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I like it.
Nice. Okay. All right. Well, again, Chris, thank you. It's been a pleasure having you on the very first episode.
We're in production now. No taking it back.
Yeah, this is it. No, but again, thank you. We're very grateful. We appreciate you. And, definitely as you progress, we'd love to have you on a future episode. We definitely want you to get that comic book done. We want to
get back on and talk
about that. Right. I want to read the series and come back to it.
TBD. TBD.
Yes. Thank you so much again.
Yeah, of course. Thank you all.
All right, now. Well, again, thank you, everyone out there. It's a wrap. Episode 1 is in the books. Check us out for episode 2. That's it. Have a good night. Catch y'all next time.